At Three Business, we think you should get more for less. With our boundless business offer, the whole team gets unlimited calls, data, and texts. And the more SIMs you buy, the more you'll save. All on the UK's fastest 5G network. That's what we call big value. Search Three Business or visit us in store.
Unlimited in the UK, based on Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data, H1 2023. See 3.co.uk.
This is LBC, from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
It's 5 minutes after 12, a tiny little bit later than usual, but I mean, we call it Mystery Hour anyway. It's never actually an hour. There's a question for you. No, don't. Please, no, don't. Seriously, if you do, you're banned forever from the programme. If you have a mystery that needs solving, a riddle that needs unravelling, an enigma that needs fixing, then this is your chance. Well, weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. I'll solve one quick mystery for you. The Bank of England has just announced that it's holding rates at 5.25%, so you can tick that one off your list, and we'll start making another one. You ring in, or someone rings in, asks a question, a who, a why, a what, a when, a whither, a whence, even perhaps the occasional wherefore. And then someone else rings in with the answer. The management's decision is final, and the management is me. But rather excitingly, these days, latterly, in recent years, there has been a prize. There still is a prize for my favourite contribution of the day. And that prize is a brand spanking new Mystery Hour board game. Beautiful bit of kit, available, of course, at mysteryhour.co.uk, or by submitting my favourite contribution of the day. You don't even have to get the question right, or the answer right, or the question doesn't even have to be good. It's just, it's entirely in the eye of the beholder, and the beholder is me. And the full terms and conditions regarding that conversation can be found at lbc.co.uk. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. Ollie's in Exeter. Ollie, question or answer?
Oh, my goodness. Hello.
Hello. You can't be surprised. Just to clarify, we haven't phoned you.
I know, but I've tried before and never got on. Anyway,
go on.
I don't want to waste time. You know when you look on your phone and it gives you the temperature for the day?
Yeah.
And then next to it, it says, feels like something else.
Yes.
How do they figure that out? Does somebody go out and stand in the cold and...
So you've got the temperature and then you've got the feels like because of wind chill factor and what else and shade and other issues that I don't know what those issues are. I probably shouldn't have said anything. So you're going to have to help me out a bit because I'm not a serial consulter of the weather app on my phone. Does the feels like temperature is different from the official temperature, is it?
Often.
Yes.
More often than not, especially like today it was 6 degrees.
Was it?
Feels like 3 when I got up this morning.
Is that right? So 6 degrees, well, that's quite a significant difference. That's a 100% disparity there. Right there, Ollie.
Yeah.
So why?
Yeah.
How? And indeed who?
I have no idea.
Who determines what...
I live in Exeter where the Met Office is. I should know, really.
Well, I don't know that, you know, I live in London where Parliament is, but goodness me, it's not as if I could answer any questions at all about how on earth we ended up with... Well, I tell a lie, I've written a book about how on earth we ended up with such an awful government, but now's not the time for me to plug my own products, Ollie. Good luck winning the Mystery Hour board game, though. Have we got an answer to that question? How do the temperature apps tell us that the temperature is 6 degrees, but it will feel like 3 degrees? Rene is in Enfield. Rene, question or answer?
Hello, hi, can you hear me?
No.
Oh.
This is awkward.
Hi.
Hello?
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 Hello? No.
Hello, can you hear me better now?
Yes, that's incredible. What did you do?
I don't know what I did.
Okay, question or answer?
I've got a question.
Carry on.
So recently I went on holiday to Italy. And I went on a plane, and on the back of the plane, you've got the plane code,
yes.
And you've got a flag.
Yes.
But sometimes the flag is printed back to front. And my question is, why is that the case? Because when I went off to Italy, it was an Air Malta flight, and the Maltese flag was printed back to front with the cross to the other side, and not how the Maltese flag should look like. So my question is, why are the flags printed back to front on a plane sometimes?
Well, if it was an Italian flag and you were flying towards Italy, it would be the correct way around. But if you were flying, it was an Italian plane and you were flying away from Italy, it would be reversed. No?
Oh.
No, I just made that up.
As in, you're on the wrong
way. No, I just made that up. I'm nearly there. Oh. but it's not that at all. I'll find out for you.
Thank you so much.
Pardon?
Thank you so much.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I'll try to get it on the board for you, Rando. Stay safe. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Libby is in Nantwich. Libby, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
I would like to know why there aren't more left-handed people.
Yes. That's a good question.
The reason I asked is that I've been working as an invigilator at my daughter's high school.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously sometimes it gets really, really boring. So I kind of amuse myself by counting how many left-handers there are.
Okay.
And I've noticed, based on obviously, you know, in-depth scientific research, that in the core exams, it generally tends to be about 1 in 10, which I believe is, you know, the
10%
average number of left-handed people.
Yes.
But in things like further maths, it drops dramatically.
Really?
And again, in some of the humanities subjects, the number of left-handers goes up above that. Sometimes you get up to like 4 in 10.
Blimey.
And I'd just really like to know why it isn't, you know, why the population doesn't have something like a 50-50 split.
So you've just thrown in the bits about further maths and the humanities as interesting side orders. Because I can't look into all of this at the same time, but I can look into why there isn't a more even spread of left-handers. I mean, the obvious answer, as I'm sure you know, is evolution, isn't it? And there being some sort of evolutionary disadvantage to being left-handed or advantage to being right-handed or both. But I can't think initially what that might be. Immediately, I can't think what that might be. Is it genetic? I mean, do we know that it's genetic? Do left-handed people have more likely to have left-handed children?
I don't know because my parents are both right-handed. I'm lefty. My parents are both right-handed. None of my children are left-handed.
Well, that answers
They're
that question.
So,
well, it does in your case. All right, so why is there not? We may have done something similar before, but you know the rules, Libby. If I can't remember the answer, then the question has never been asked. Why are there not more? Why is it such a small minority? I've got 10% in my head, but goodness knows there's a lot of stuff in my head that is absolute beeswax. So I don't know why we'd think that was necessarily true. 12:12 is the time. Ewan's in Birmingham. Ewan, question or answer?
Hi, James, it's a question.
Carry on.
It's about recipes, and I want to apologise for putting your recipe the other week in inverted commas on Twitter. I'm sorry, mate.
What do you mean?
The Brussels sprout recipe. I put the recipe word in inverted commas and you...
Oh, you did, didn't you? Yes.
I'm so sorry.
I was not very happy about it. How can it not be a recipe? You've got ingredients that you combine and it involves cooking. So how is that not a recipe, Ewan?
I'm wrong and I was flipping. I do apologise.
That's all right. Guys, you and Ed Davey, everyone's saying sorry on this programme today. did you enjoy it?
I did. God, it tasted amazing.
It's incredible, right? Even the cheesemakers got in touch with me. Santa Gur sent me some free cheese.
They've got drowning in the stuff.
Well, they didn't send me that much actually, but I've got through all the stuff that they did. But there's three different types. Did you know this? There's the hard, there's the normal cheese, which I think you used, didn't you? You didn't use the cream cheese.
No, I thought you were talking about the crumbly one.
No,
and then I realised there was the cream one, and I thought, yeah.
So there's the cream one and there's the crumbly one, but there's a whipped one as well, which I hadn't seen.
I don't know that.
No, nor had I. I think it might be VIP sort of level stuff, Ewan, you know, like tap on the nose type territory. And that is not for your sprouts. That's just for a nice little bit of baguette, scoop it in the bowl and, man, I actually had it for lunch yesterday. Anyway, I digress. Best bit of marketing that company's ever done, sending me three tubs of free cheese. Question or answer?
It's a question about recipes. My mother used to keep a load of old recipe books, and she's got some that are incredibly old. And she, the measurements were always imperial, yes, for the more recent ones, but she's got some that say nothing else other than cup of.
Yes.
And she always explained it to me that it was about proportions. It didn't matter how many cups you had or how big your cup was, just as long as you had three of them related to everything else, then it was fine.
Yeah.
And they all reference sticker butter, which I know the Americans still reference sticker butter. Now, I know what the weight of it is. That's not the question. The question is, if cup related to a cup and an object, what was the stick?
Yeah, so because if a stick is denoting the weight, then it can't work in the same way that a cup does.
Yeah, so but she could never tell me the answer to the question.
So,
she understood the cup proportions bit, but the stick was lost in the mist.
Well, are we sure that recipes would refer both to cups and sticks?
No, that's why I'm ringing.
Well, if they don't refer to cups and sticks, we haven't got a problem, have we?
Well, you get cups and sticks in the same recipe.
You would. That's what I asked you.
A stick of butter and a cup of flour.
Okay. Well, I think there's a sort of broad consensus on what a cup is, because I know from Nigella's recipe is always you press a button to turn it from English to American and then American back to British.
No, it's not the weights I'm worried about, because my mum always explained that the cup was about proportion, so you could have any...
You put me in a very uncomfortable position, because I think your mum might have been wrong.
Oh, okay.
I think there is consensus on what a cup is, because an American cup is different from a UK cup, mate.
Right.
Certainly on a rice maker, you can't be faffing about with cups. It's a really specific measurement. And, you know, you put two cups and then top up the water to a certain level. If you were using random cups of different sizes, you'd have rice coming out of your ears.
Would you not have two cups of rice and two cups of water?
Yeah, but not if you're... that might work, but you'd not be topping it up to the level in the rice cooker where it says two cups, you see.
True. But that's kind of the evolution of the fact that there is now a standard.
I mean, there's a question there somewhere. I'm just not entirely sure we've pinned down exactly what it is. So just general inquiries about cups and sticks.
Why is it a stick?
Is it a
stick? Is it a physical piece of stick? It
probably was. It probably would have been a way for them to sell it back in the day, wouldn't it? A stick. You don't want a block because it'll go off quicker in the days before refrigeration. So I'm all right, thank you, missus. I'll just have a stick.
There you go.
We'll find out. I like it, Ewan. Happy eating. Happy munching. Try and get hold of that whipped one if you can. Seriously. 12:16 is the time. Ewan's in Birmingham. Of course, I'm in Wolverhampton tomorrow night. And I think it's the only gig I've done in the last since November the 2nd when the book came out. Or no, October the something. I think there's still some tickets. I think Wolverhampton is poised to let me down and be the only non-sold-out event of my entire book tour. But that's... tomorrow night at Wolfram Halls in Wolverhampton, if you fancy coming along. It should be a good night. 12:16 is the time.
Washing, dishes, vacuuming, household chores never end. Even for me, Albert Einstein. But you know what? I leave it all till later. Because I've got a smart meter. And right now I'm part of a scheme where I get rewarded for changing when I use my energy. More than 1 million others took part last winter using less energy at peak times. Good, eh?
Get ready to start earning rewards. Search Get a Smart Meter today. Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes available to selected customers.
Getting that brand new car you've been saving up for? It's a leap that can have you going from...
Oh, how amazing is this?
To...
Who are these clowns on the road?
Don't worry. Churchill is here to help keep you chilled. Oh, yes. Our uninsured driver promise means that if you're involved in an accident with an uninsured driver that isn't your fault, your no-claim discount won't be affected. Enjoy the leap into your new wheels with Churchill. With comprehensive cover, registration number, make and model of the other car is required to make a claim.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It's 19 minutes after 12. You're listening to Mystery Hour with me. We want to know what's the difference between the temperature and what the temperature feels like? How do they measure it and how can they be so different, often quite markedly different? Rene's question about flags on a plane was even simpler than I thought. My answer was a bit stupid because I gave the impression that they took the flags off the planes and changed them depending on which direction they were flying in. But actually, if you think about American soldiers and epaulettes and stuff, anyway, the question's on the board. Why do the flags on planes sometimes face the wrong way and sometimes they face the right way? Why are there so few left-handed people? Or if you prefer, why aren't there more left-handed people? And finally, what's a stick of butter all about? Sounds like a tongue twister, that, doesn't it? Or a nursery rhyme. Peter Piper picked it. What's a stick of butter all about? David's in Chepstow. David, question or answer?
Hi, James. Great show.
Thank you, mate.
I'm ringing in about mammals. Humans are mammals.
Yes.
We're born. We have a number of umbilical cord connected to our afterbirth.
Yes.
The cord is cut manually and clamped.
Yes.
What happens to other mammals in the animal kingdom? How do they manage their umbilical cords? They can't clamp them, so what do they do?
I think they just chomp through them, mate.
So how do they stop them bleeding out then? Because we clamp ours to stop our... presumably to stop ourselves bleeding out. So what happens?
I think that they have evolved differently from us.
Okay.
And therefore, they don't need to worry about bleeding out.
Yeah, so gorillas and chimpanzees, very similar to us. I was thinking about it and I thought, this is a good one for
you. Yeah, well, it is. I mean, do animals have belly buttons? Is this a sort of obvious follow-up question to this, isn't it?
And are they outies or innies?
And are they outies or innies? I know that cats bite through them. I'm not joking, because we had cats some friends of ours had. I've seen cats giving birth. I've seen cats bite through an umbilical cord, but I don't know why. The blood supply from the placenta, isn't it? So it's going to have something to do with the placenta, isn't it? I don't know why I'm even muddling around on this one. It's not as if I'm going to stumble across the answer by accident, is it, in the context of this conversation? But it's a good. But I know that cats bite through them, so that's part of your. Because I mean, your question was literally, what do mammals do to cut
mammals,
through?
Mammals, yeah. But I was specifically thinking about primates, because we're a primate. And
yeah,
I was just thinking,
well, you should have said that, because I mean, theoretically, by having witnessed a cat biting through an umbilical cord, I have theoretically answered your question.
You have, yeah.
But I'm going to leave it on the board, nonetheless.
Marvellous.
All right.
Mind there you go. Appreciate it.
Cheers, David. Stay safe. 22 after 12 is the time. Mike's in Taunton. Mike, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on, Mike.
So it's the flag question on aircraft. Well,
try not to make the rest of us feel too stupid, all right?
No, it's reasonably straightforward, as you say. So you imagine you're looking at a flagpole, and the flagpole is to the left of the flag flying. That's the part that's called the hoist, is the effectively the nearest the flagpole. The bit of the flag at the far end is called the fly. Yeah. And if you are looking at the flag such that the flagpole is on the left, it will look to be the right way round.
Correct.
If you go round the other side and look at it so that the flagpole is on the right of the flag, the flag will effectively be backwards. So on aircraft bodies, they're effectively like a flagpole. So from the starboard side, it will be the right way round, and from the port side, no, I've got it the wrong way round. From the port side, it will be the right way round. From the starboard side, it will be backwards.
So, I mean, to make things even simpler, you just need to imagine that the tail fin was made of glass and you only had a flag on one side.
Yeah, that would work.
There you go. So that's, 'cause what I've done there, you see, as a radio expert, is I've painted a picture in people's minds, Mike, whereas you were relying on your verbal skills to describe it. And I have created an image now in people's minds in which they immediately understand what you just brilliantly described. So between us, we've done words and pictures.
What a team.
What a team. You can keep the round of applause, though, mate. I've got them coming out my ears.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Oh, hang on. Qualifications.
I'm a glider pilot.
Wow,
we don't have flags, typically. Yeah, we don't typically have flags on gliders, but I'm a bit of an aviation buff, so I read that years ago.
What if you were doing a bit of gliding near a border of another country? Would you need one then?
Well, the club record from the club that I fly at in Devon.
Yeah.
So imagine this, taking off early in the morning and flying all day without touching the ground. The club record is Germany.
No.
Seriously.
I had no idea.
Yeah, pretty amazing effort by a chap called Will.
Will, some years ago. What's the appeal of gliding as opposed to a small engined plane?
Well, I think it's the difference between sailing on a canvas and a powerboat. So there's kind of a bit more skill to it. You've got to read the sky, read the weather,
work out
how it's all going to pan out on the day. There's a bit more to it.
And you're a bit more in tune with nature, I suppose, aren't you? As opposed to battling it, as it were. I've always been fascinated. I think I'm too old now. I don't know about you, but I've become less bold as I've got older. But I would have really loved to go on a glider flight when I was younger. But now I think I'd get the willies.
No, you don't need boldness. There's a saying in flying that you get old pilots and bold pilots, but you don't get old bold
pilots. I've never heard that before. I rather like it. Thank you, Mike. Stay safe. Don't be bold. Don't be bold. You can't help being old. None of us can. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. Jennifer is in Stilton. Jennifer, question or answer?
Hey, buddy. You okay?
Very well, mate. How are you?
Jen. Well, I've been better. So I keep... Sorry if I stumble on my words, by the way.
No, you take your time.
I keep having strokes, so I've had two. And because of that, I keep on having MRIs.
Oh, my days.
Okay, so this is where the question comes from. So I have my MRI, and I'm fascinated. I appreciate that they're obviously the picture is sort of through a magnetic field, but they are so loud. Like, it'll go clonk, clonk.
They
clonk,
are extraordinarily
clonk.
Loud.
Like,
I,
really
oddly,
loud.
For reasons that I won't go into, I was in the room with an MRI scanner just 2 weeks ago, Jen, and I thought it was like a really bad drum and bass DJ. There was a kind of, there'd be some of the noises coming out of that machine. When they give you, earplugs. They give you earplugs.
Yeah,
to,
yeah. But still, and it goes me, boom, 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 boom.
That's it, and drum and bass.
I'm trying to visualise it.
Yeah.
But I and obviously given technology these days and
you'd
things,
have thought someone might have come up with a quiet one by
precisely.
Now.
Precisely.
Well, they're sound waves. Yeah. They're probably sending sound waves through your brain, so they can't, no, not that, no. Apparently.
No, they can't because you can have it on all different parts of the body.
It's great. Do you know, you won't believe this, but every year, on about four separate occasions, something happens in my life that makes me think, oh, I must remember to ask that on Mystery Hour. And then every single time I forget. And that is only about 2-3 weeks old, that question, for me. And I really, and there it is. Oh, you've got it in there.
I've been sent just for it.
Sent from heaven. And thank you for all the presents you keep sending in as well.
It's
absurdly generous of you. Crinkle cut, the Seabrook prawn cocktail crisps went down particularly well at Christmas.
Although I did feel bad about thinking about how you'd get them home on public transport.
I worked it out. I ate them all.
Yeah.
I ate them all on the day they arrived. Jen, you take care of yourself. All right. Stay safe and stay strong. I'm sorry for what you're going through. It's 28 after 12 is the time. Why are they so loud? If you've never been, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. But my God, they're loud. 03456060973. Lewis is in Putney. Lewis, question or answer?
Answer, James. I'm here to correct the record.
Go on, then. Yes.
Because I answered this about 2 years ago on Mystery Hour, and then I looked it up and found out I was wrong.
Oh, hang on. Well, first of all, can we withdraw Lewis's round of applause, please, Keith? Thank you very much. Carry on, Lewis.
So the technical answer I gave a couple of years ago was we don't actually know,
yes.
And the technical answer is still we don't actually know, but the theories have updated.
Oh, go on.
So they think handedness is linked to bipedalness in mammals because you get only get left-handed kangaroos or red kangaroos. And it's due to a part of the brain, which is in the left hemisphere, I've forgotten, it's like BGC12,
yeah, of course,
which is linked in humans to tool use. And they think, because back in from archaeological data, like cave paintings, it was always right-handed tool makers. And they do think that back in the ages of history, all humans would have been right-handed, like
right.
All Neanderthals were right-handed.
Okay.
And it's a random mutation of genetics that has caused left-handedness to come about because certain sports, combative sports like boxing and MMA, left-handed boxers and fighters have a better win rate than right-handed ones because most people who are right-handed expect a blow from the corresponding hand.
Yes, of course.
But if you're left-handed, you've got that advantage. And so they think that also corresponds to a potential slight advantage. So although there is a lower level of left-handedness in the population, it's a gradually increasing one. And like the lady said...
So it is actually evolution in action.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. So, and it's the opposite of what my original presumption was, that there must be an evolutionary disadvantage to it because it's in such a small number, but in fact it started from scratch in the history of humanity, and because it provides some advantage in some circumstances, it's going up, not down.
Yes, and that's correct. And like you see, and you won't see it in other sports like darts, for example, that there's no advantage to being left-handed there or right-handed.
Well, that's a lovely answer. What about golf?
I don't know about golf. I would assume the same because it's not a combative sport. It's not like football where you're left-footed.
You're doing most of your training, most of your sparring with a right-handed fighter. You get used to it, and then you get in the ring with a left-handed fighter, and he clocks you one.
Exactly.
Qualifications, please.
A degree in medical genetics, and I looked this up a couple of years ago to make sure that Mystery Hour was correct, because whilst the disgraced former Prime Minister might not correct the record, I will.
Look at that, Lewis, showing the way, shining a light and damning the disgraced former Prime Minister Boris Johnson at the same time. Round of applause for Lewis. It's about his millionth. Just take one away and give him another one back straight away. Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
At AAT, we believe in your potential.
I worked in a call centre.
I didn't go to university.
You don't need to be good at maths.
I never saw myself as an accountant.
It's given me the skills I need
to get a more rewarding job.
I was able to work full time.
I studied in the evenings.
I absolutely love that I've done it.
It's made me feel really proud to have my qualification.
From school leavers to career changers, every year 80,000 people study an AAT accounting course and get the essential skills all employers need. Visit aat.org.uk.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
Quite a lot of MRI-related action coming in now, thanks to Jen in Stilton. This is from Paul in Manchester. I don't know why it tickled me. He goes, I had an MRI and I was so bored, I identified the various noises as follows. He actually uses the word thus. It's one of my favourite words. Star Wars phasers. That's yeah. Do. Shall I do all of them or would that be weird? Avant-garde 50s score melodrama. Yeah. That's a sort of thumpy, drummy one, isn't it? I can't do that one, mate. I barely do Star Wars phasers. Bouncing ball followed by pneumatic drill. We all recognise. Tommy gun. Stamping machine that turns into a nuclear reactor alarm. That's another one that I recognise. The bouncing ball, but heavier. You've got a lovely way with words, Paul. In fact, looking at this all laid out on my screen, it looks like a poem. In the first two scans, there was also a Hammond organ. Occasional techno beats. We had quite a lot of techno beats. And an occasional tapping like kids are viewing you through the one-way glass. It is a veritable potpourri of sound effects, most of which, as Jen attests, are incredibly loud. Now, that's a very jolly MRI-related contribution to the programme. This one is less cheering, for me at least, although it'll probably tickle you. Dean's been in touch. He says, I had an MRI last year, James. It was at 10 a.m. and they asked me what radio station I wanted on my headphones. So I said, LBC, please. And afterwards, the nurse said, it goes on a bit, doesn't he? After one of your monologues. Hey, you can't do that. It's just outrageous. Duncan's in Richmond. Duncan, question or answer?
Hello, mate. It's a question, please.
Carry on.
Has the gestation period for our species always been the same, or has it changed through evolution?
Why'd you ask?
Well, we've just had a baby. She's 9 weeks old now. Aww. And I was watching a documentary, a National Geographic documentary, and these little baby monkeys can grip their mum on day one.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, our baby, as all human babies, are completely helpless.
Oh,
have we, when we were monkey, you know, years and years, millennia ago, as we've evolved, were we able to do that? And has it changed? And funnily enough, monkeys' gestation periods seem to be shorter than ours.
Are there any other mammals that are utterly, there are quite a few that are utterly helpless when they're born, but not very long, not for very
long.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think of horses, they can walk on the first day of birth, can't they? The first day of life, can't they? Yeah. So we're just so underdeveloped. So has it always been like that, or did we?
Well, hang on a minute. Lengthen? That's a bit anti-human, mate. That's a bit humanish. So maybe all the other animals are overdeveloped. Have you ever thought of that?
Well, yeah, it could be.
What has it always been a 9 month?
I presume it has.
It's a nice question. It's surprising how many questions have a sort of evolutionary flavour on this programme. It must say something about the stuff that we wonder about. Duncan, congratulations on the new arrival. I'll try and get you an answer to that. 12:38 is the time. What have we got? Why did temperatures feel like, and we've got two temperatures on the average app. One will tell you the temperature and the other will tell you what it feels like. What's going on there? We've done the flags on a plane. We've done the left-handed. That was Lewis. Stick of butter. What's a stick of butter all about? What's a stick of butter all about? It sounds like a George Formby song. Ding, 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 ding. What's a stick of butter all about? Umbilical cords. What do other mammals do with umbilical cords? Don't look at me like that. That was just off-the-cuff sort of comedy references. What's a stick of butter? Why are MRI scanners so loud? And have humans always had the same gestation period? I like all of these questions this week. Sandra's in Helston in Cornwall. Sandra, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
Hi. It's an answer to the umbilical cord question.
Okay, yes.
So the umbilical cord doesn't contain a huge amount of blood, and it will only deliver blood for as long as the placenta is still attached to the wall of the uterus. as soon as the placenta detaches, there's no longer an active blood flow.
Oh, so you can just chew your way through it. And then
exactly.
It'll just probably wither off a bit.
Like our infants do, you know, we clamp and cut the cord.
Yeah.
We try and do delayed cord clamping now because when the baby is born, a third of its blood volume is still in the placenta, so we give it time to come back.
Yeah.
It's called placental transfusion, and that protects them against childhood anemia and stuff like that. So then we clamp and cut the cord, and effectively that there's a valve inside the abdomen at the umbilical cord base that then closes, so that blood flow is no longer part of its circulating volume.
Well, isn't that interesting?
So the majority of animals will, when the cord has stopped pulsating, just chew through it. In mammals that are really tall, so like elephants and giraffes.
Yes, I knew you were going to say giraffes.
Their infants fall to the ground and the cord snaps.
Oh, Lord.
But because they're larger animals, they have a greater circulating volume, so they can afford to lose a little bit.
So
it doesn't affect them adversely.
Well, that's a very comprehensive answer, Sandra.
Thank you so much.
What's your qualifications?
I'm a midwife. I could also answer the gestation question.
You're not allowed to.
I'm not allowed to.
No, I've got very strict rules. Very strict rules. But you've got yourself a round of applause. So thank you very much.
And congratulations to last caller and their new arrival.
Yes, to Duncan and his partner. Thank you, Sandra. That's a lovely answer. Sometimes you can tell as an answer comes in that you're never going to forget it. And other times I've forgotten it before the programme has finished. I don't know why. I guess that some people are good communicators. I'm not going to insult anyone by suggesting some of the answers we've had already that I've already forgotten. But I shall always remember Sandra's answer, I think. Until, of course, someone rings in and asks the same question, at which point, no doubt, you'll be queuing up to point out that I've already forgotten the answer I said I'd never forget. Deborah's in Swanscombe. Deborah, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
When somebody passes away and they have tattoos, do those tattoos retain their colour? Do they go instantly? Do they not go?
Do they not remove them and give them to the family?
Well, I never thought of that.
Or possibly they photocopy them for posterity.
I don't know,
and I hesitate to ask why you want to know now that I've made two very poor jokes about the prospect of.
You don't want to ask.
I'm not going to ask. But I mean, what makes you think they might change? Just because the skin has changed, the canvas has changed, therefore the art might have changed as well.
Well, I'm not sure because for some reason in my head I've got it that your blood has got something to do with your skin. So if the blood's gone, then would the skin, would it change?
What would happen? I presume as the body dries out, it would change, but not immediately on death. I wouldn't. Well, I'll find out. What happens to your tattoos after you die?
Yeah.
Crikey. I really want to know why you want to know now, but I can't ask you. Will it make my two jokes look really insensitive?
No.
You promise, because you can't just say it won't, and then I end up looking really insensitive.
No, right, I would never do that to you. Well, because I've got tattoos.
Oh, that's
so
right.
I just wonder whether they would, you know, eventually go.
Yeah. Oh, you could. I mean, I won't do any more poor jokes. I think I was riding by the seat of my pants already on that one. So what will happen to Deborah's tattoos in the horrible event and hopefully long-distant event of her shuffling off this mortal coil? 10, 12, even 42 is the time. Greg's in Gloucester. Greg. Question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello.
Hi, it's a question.
Hello.
How are you? You're right.
Yeah, very well.
I want to know why albums are called albums.
Right.
I know this, but carry on. Do you? Well,
yeah,
the word album means white, or Albus means white. So we've got the Beatles releasing the White. You and I probably put photos in a photo.
No, Albumen. Albumen is white.
Yeah, but that comes from Albus, meaning white.
Oh, okay. Go on then. Yeah.
So, and if you look up the word, it says Albus or album.
Yeah, but but album, as in a collection of things, has nothing to do with the colour white.
It's according to any source that I've seen, because I've been curious about this for a while.
Yeah, go on.
It stems from the same Latin word meaning white.
But I know why they're called albums, even though there's only one of them. But that's not the question that you're going to ask, is it? But I'm going to answer anyway because it gives me a good opportunity to recommend that everybody visits the Brentford Musical Museum or the Musical Museum in Brentford, which I read recently is facing financial struggles post-COVID and where you will have a most entertaining and enlightening time, but particularly in the field of pianolas. So these were incredibly desirable items in the sort of turn of the century, late Victorian period.
I know them well, yeah.
You'd have a pianola in your house and you'd have a load of things, you know, the pianos that play themselves.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
And you'd have an out, so that you'd have a collection of music that you played in it, and that was called an album. And then that slowly evolved as you know, to become just one record, and you'd still call it an album, which is both interesting.
So why then do stamp collectors collect their stamps in a stamp white?
Well, that's the point I'm making now, is that this is not fascinating, though it is, and timely, and also community spirited of me to recommend the Musical Museum in Brentford, where they also
get the plug in.
Greg, they also have a fully functioning Wurlitzer organ, and it's one of the only places in the country where you can watch a silent film with full Wurlitzer accompaniment.
Really?
Yeah, full Wurlitzer accompaniment. So you can watch like an Errol Flynn film or something like that. And
give them another plug.
The Musical Museum in Brentford. And there are a few people in the country who are still expert at playing. And all that. That's, of course, where the phrase bells and whistles come from. Because they can play all the bells and whistles. So you've got things like, you know, stagecoach sound effects and bells ringing and doo-doo-doo-doo horns. And it's all coming from the same amazing organ. And you can go there. And watch it. But they are, I've read this week, struggling, and I think it was in the local paper, so do find. But anyway, what's it got to do with white is the question you're asking.
It is, yeah. I mean, you and I have a similar age. We probably used to collect photos and we put them in a photo album.
Could it be that the white contains the yolk?
Album N. Yes, album N is the egg white.
The egg white, but what came first?
The Latin stemmed word, which means white.
What came first, though, the album or the egg?
So what does a stamp album have to do with an egg white?
It contains the stamps in the way that the egg white encloses the yolk.
Okay, that's interesting. So next time I listen to the official... on another radio station, listen to the official white charts on a weekend. I shall remember that it's to do the yolk.
I'm not giving myself a round of applause for this, Greg, as things stand.
Can I just give a quick shout out to the glider guy, because he gave the old and bold pilots quote, and that was quoted in a Disney film in the 70s called The Black Hole by a robot called Vincent, and I'm a proud owner of the limited edition of one of the original soundtrack whites.
Jack White's well played. I mean, it's all happening on the show today, isn't it? I like that question, actually. But there may be, why is an album called an album when the root of the word would appear to be from the Latin for white? 0345 606 0973. Great work, Greg. 12:47 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:50 is the time. What happens to tattoos when the bearer perishes? Have humans always had the same gestation period? Why are MRI scanners so long? We've done the umbilical cord. And what's the stick of butter all about? And what was Ollie's question? I've forgotten Ollie's question. I've even written it down. I can't read my own writing. Oh, yeah, the temperature. I've written, sorry. Sometimes my doodles get in the way of my doodles. Jack's in St. Albans. Jack, question or answer?
It's answer.
Carry on, mate.
So why are MRI scanners so loud?
Yeah.
So it's... there's a bit of a clue in the name, so they're magnetic resonance imaging machines fit a large magnet spinning round and changing direction through the distant sort of imagery on you.
Well, I mean, I've hear large things spinning around quite often. They don't make anything like the racket that an MRI makes.
It's the change in direction as well and the proximity you are to it.
Yeah, and it's very heavy, so the machinery used to move it makes a lot of noise as well.
Yeah.
I suppose before I start expressing more scepticism of what your qualifications are, I should chat. Well, scepticism of what your answer is, I should establish what your qualifications are.
Qualifications, I've had an inordinate amount of MRI scanners in my lifetime. And MRI scans in my lifetime.
Oh, you poor thing. And you asked,
that's
did
great
you?
Fun.
You got to, you develop a taste for it, Jack. You start sort of thinking, oh, I love this one. This is my favourite track.
I can fall asleep in them now. It's...
Can you really?
Yeah.
Gosh. And you've asked, presumably, in the hospital.
Yeah. I've asked the radiographers what the big noise, and they've...
So it's the mechanicals. Explained. The mechanicals of moving the magnet, essentially.
Yeah.
Right, that's a perfect answer. Round of applause for you.
Thank you.
Are you still having a lot? Are you still in the woods as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, right. Annual fun of them. It's just part of life, isn't it?
Well, apparently you can put me on the radio and then a nurse will come up to you afterwards and say, blimey, he goes on a bit, doesn't he?
So yeah, I'll do that next time.
There's that to look forward to. Jack, take care of yourself, mate. Thank you for that. It's a cracking answer. 12:52 is the time. So Jack's gone in on the MRIs. Greg asked the question about the albums. Darren, meanwhile, is in Plymouth. Darren, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
The answer to the feels like temperature versus the actual temperature.
Yes, please.
It's the function of your human body's ability to get rid of our body heat. So the actual temperature and the feels like temperature would be very similar in light winds and fairly average humidities, around about 80%.
Yeah.
But if the wind is increasing, therefore makes it windier, makes your body's ability to lose heat even faster. Therefore, it feels like a lower temperature. However, if the humidity increases past 80 up to 90-95%, your human body ability to sweat decreases massively. Therefore, it feels like a higher temperature.
Well, I never... And how do they put a number on the temperature? Do they use calculations? Is it an algorithm into which you punch humidity, temperature, windiness?
Yes, as well as UV index as well.
So they don't send someone out into the street? Well, they wouldn't, would they? Because with a different...
I think they did that once, and then we got a calculation from there.
They've worked it back from there.
We don't do that.
That's a cracking answer. Thank you. Well, hang on. What are your qualifications?
I'm a meteorologist in the Royal Navy.
Oh, well, that's a cool job.
It's a pretty cool job.
That is a cool... I mean, you live and learn, don't you? Never crossed my mind that you... So you, does each ship have its own meteorologist, or do you work from shore?
So most will have their own.
Wow.
Most officers are trained in some way, shape or form in meteorology.
Is that right?
But then we also have a shore establishment, which then gives support to other units.
And
which is where I work.
And you're a uniformed member of the Royal Navy as well?
That's right. And on the left side of my uniform, the flag is the right way around.
Well played. Very well played. Round of applause for Darren. That's called comedic callback, I think. It's well done, mate. 12:54 is the time. David's in Manchester. David, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
About tattoos. I was fortunate enough to be with both of my parents at the time they passed and held their hands.
Oh.
And when a person passes, almost instantly you can see the skin, the colour of it and the texture change.
Gosh.
My dad had lots of kind of sailor type tattoos, and when he passed, his skin became kind of translucent, so you could almost see through it. But and I don't know the scientific reasons, but the colours do slightly change. So in my dad's case, some of the reds became slightly more vivid, the blacks became a little bit duller, but the tattoos were still there. And I visited him a few times before they closed the casket. And then they were still there. And even over time, the skin changes. And I guess it would depend what I think it was Brenda, what she has done when she is with when she passes, because my dad
Deborah.
Was embalmed, my mum wasn't.
Really?
So the texture of my father's skin was very different to my mum's because she wasn't embalmed and he was. So
crikey.
I don't know what the scientific reason is for that, but
she'll
still have her tattoos and they'll still be there for her family to see when they visit her.
When the time comes. What a lovely answer. I'm sorry you're so well qualified to answer it, really, David.
Well, it happens to us all, doesn't it?
This is very, very... Tattoos or not. Can I have a round of applause for David, please? Thank you, mate. Lovely stuff. Dan's in Croydon. Dan, question or answer?
Hello, James, mate. It is an answer.
Carry on.
Albums.
Yes.
The word can also be translated as blank. And so,
blank
slate,
similar
actually. To Spanish blank blanco. So,
yeah.
So you'll have a photo album that you get as a blank album, and you put it in. Musically, it goes right back to the early 19th
century. It goes back further. So it is white. It's the thing. They used to have it in the marketplace in ancient Rome. So you'd have a chalked up space that you could then write stuff on, like, you know,
exactly.
There's a jumble sale this Thursday at 2 o'clock. Or, sorry, in like a jumbleless sale this Thursday at 12. So Albus or Albo or something. So yes, that's it.
Exactly. Blank, yeah. And then you tie that into music with the blank music sheets where they would then write the notation. That then became a piece of music, which then became an album, and that's how we've got modern day albums with that. Music.
Beautiful. So it's a space into which you put stuff, essentially, but it's got nothing whatsoever to do with eggs.
No, unfortunately not.
Qualifications?
Been a touring musician for 20 years and did some music theory study.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Dan, please.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you, mate. And Dara is in Manchester. Dara, question or answer?
Answer, James, on the MRI question. Cool. Steward's inquiry.
Is steward's inquiry or a simple embellishment and improvement on the original?
Pretty much a steward's inquiry. Nothing actually moves in an MRI scanner. No. It doesn't actually spin.
Right.
So there's three real things in an MRI scanner that make the noises. So when you walk into the MRI scanner, there's a kind of a background noise that makes a kind of a dunk-dunk noise every couple of seconds. That's what's called the cold head.
Yeah.
That's a compressor recompressing the helium.
Right.
So that it compresses it back into liquid helium because it's a main magnetic field, the main coil is bathed in liquid helium. It's a superconducting magnet.
Wow.
Then there's what we call an RF coil, radio frequency coil, which sits kind of closest to your head. And that makes those kind of chirpy noises, the cheep-cheeps, the kind of high-pitched noises.
Sounds a bit like being in a fax machine, doesn't it, having an MRI scan?
Yeah, and then outside the RF coil, there's a gradient coil, which is what makes the kind of big, more substantial banging noises.
This is a detailed answer, but I sense you've barely started, and Sheila Fogarty's already in the room. So
that's the three things that make the three noises. Nothing spins, but what we do is we rotate the magnetic field in the coil. Nothing actually physically moves. And they're the three things that generate three different types of noise that you hear in an MRI.
Extraordinarily detailed answer. What are your qualifications, Dara?
I have a PhD in neuroimaging and psychiatry.
Well, that answers that question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Great stuff. I think we're done, aren't we? Board game, come on. I mean, crikey, this week. I'm going to give it to Duncan because he didn't get an answer and he's got a new baby. So Duncan and Duncan's partner will be able to play the Mystery Hour board game when perhaps baby's not sleeping that well. It's only 9 weeks old.
It's a good idea.
It is, isn't it? So there are a lot of contenders this week. And Jenny Stilton's already got one because I know that she took it to hospital and everyone on the ward enjoyed playing it as well. So there you go. That's it. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player, the official LBC app, where you can also pause and rewind live radio. Download it now for free from your app store or head to globalplayer.com. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.